Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in our central Iowa community. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer Michael Murphy. You name it, Michael Murphy, and Pat Schlerbaum, our good neighbor and Milford Township resident naturalist. Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, will share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages later this hour. So, Pat, what's your reaction to this spring weather transition?
Well, we've had another event, but it's only temporary this time. Trumpeter swans have pretty much left Ada Hayden. It's wide open water, but the photographers around Iowa are sure excited about all the trumpeter swans that people are seeing. 129 nesting pairs last year. So the swans are here to encourage us to do more for conservation.
Yes, and they send out their little reminder squads. They've dropped in my prairie. They've hung around your place a little bit, and then they head north and disperse.
They are definitely setting up their territories for another successful nesting later this spring in May.
Great.
Bye.
And that was Oliver's Good Morning Starshine, and I just thought that was appropriate for this morning to help disperse this fog that we're facing and perhaps get the sap flowing and promote photosynthesis later this season. And with that, we're going to talk to Gary Guthrie about a number of trees that he's falling in love with and starting to place in the appropriate areas with the help of Luke Grand. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Morning.
Gary, why don't you start out and tell us, why are you planting 1,300 trees on your property?
We have about 2 acres in the far southeast corner of our farm, which is located just a mile west of Shipley. And it had been farmed for quite a few years, and then there was parts of it that was eroding. So it's not a very productive piece of land. And we just felt with climate warming, we wanted to establish maybe what you might call lungs for the farm, to really sink some carbon and provide a space for pleasure and habitat for the birds and insects and other animals. And so Luke at Prudentera helped us plan for planting these. It's about 1,450 trees and shrubs. And on this 2 acres, and it's about 16 rows. And what we decided to do is establish a tree labyrinth. You know about prayer labyrinths that a lot of churches have, but we're establishing a tree labyrinth so that we'll have different sayings on signs throughout the grove. And if you walk the whole thing leisurely, it takes about 50 minutes.
So the difference between, this is not a maze, like some folks might think. It's a truly a labyrinth. Could you just expound on that just a little bit more, Gary, on why a labyrinth?
Yeah, we want a place, it's a little secluded area, and we wanted a place where people could go and just walk to be among the trees. So, for example, if you don't mind, there's a poem by Mary Oliver called When I Am Among the Trees. May I share that?
Sure.
And this kind of describes the spirit of the place. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and honey locust, especially the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness, I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me the trees stir in their leaves and call out, stay a while. The light flows from their branches. And they call again. It's simple, they say, and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine.
Now, Gary, who's the author of that poem?
That's Mary Oliver.
Mary Oliver, okay.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I noticed, couldn't help but notice, but you read that off a piece of paper, a different form of tree.
Right.
Inspiration in many ways.
There's a poem about that too that we might use in the grove. But so we'll have these. My wife is burning these poems and sayings onto plaques that we'll have on poles, and then we'll have stumps of trees out in the labyrinth for people to sit and just ponder the sayings. Or it's a place for contemplation, really, and to enjoy walking in nature. And we know after COVID, or all this time during COVID, so many more people got out into nature, and we want to provide a space for that.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. Let's visit with Luke for just a minute. Luke, how did Gary contact you and get you involved in this project?
I think I remember we were talking about the spirit together. Gary's my spiritual mentor, informally. And yeah, we were talking about his prairie. We were talking about wildlife and carbon and climate change, and I think we might have been talking about all the other great stuff Gary's doing on his farm, like his prairie strips and, you know, shifting towards no-till more and more, and, you know, trying to improve the quality of the soil. And then he showed me this really steep part of his farm that was, like, pretty blonde. You know, the soil was really, like, light-colored. And,
right.
And we thought, gosh, that would be a cool place for a forest, you know, and a tree planting. And, yeah, I think Gary just had the vision, and then I might have mentioned something about a new machine I was building called a tree planter that you can pull behind a tractor and it makes a furrow in the ground, and you have a couple people ride along in the back, and they can stick in like a little bare root tree every 4 or 5 feet, so you can put a bunch of trees in the ground in a day. I think we got an acre planted in a day.
I think 2 acres. Luke, you got the whole thing done in a day.
2 acres planted in a day. So, yeah, it's we usually can plant 1 to 2 acres a day, depending on the complexity of the site. Yeah, I remember we got to talk to his dad, too, and his dad's a real big tree fan, you know, and had all these great questions about trees and what kind of species. And so, yeah, it's just amazing how, you know, if you have a good relationship with landowners, you know, you never know what needs that will come up over time. Gary and I have had a relationship for, beautiful relationship for maybe at least 15 years. And I think that's really important when you want to try something new on your farm. You really want to work with people you trust and people you know, and that was really helpful.
Yeah, and we've, I believe, talked to you in the past, Luke, on some of the projects that you've been involved in. How did you and Gary determine what type of species to use? You know, this seems really important because when you talk about a tree planter, some people envision sticking little white pine bare root seedlings, you know, all in a row. And we know that from past experience, unless you're doing that specifically as a crop, that you want diversity, not only to protect against diseases that might damage some or go through the entire monoculture, but you want diversity for all the critters around there. Can you or Gary address that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that was one of the first questions I got from Gary's dad and Gary at the same time. You know, well, if we do this, what kind of species would we plant? You know, and the first thing a forester does is we look at the soil type and figure out what kind of qualities the soil has. How well drained is it? Is it excessively drained, you know, super dry? Is it excessively wet? And we found on Gary's property, in this little 2 acre chunk, there were at least 3 different zones of different soils. The ridge top was really dry, excessively drained, really eroded, you know. The back slope was a little bit eroded as well, but not as much, and it was pretty well drained. And then the bottom was super wet and had full of clay. So each of those 3 zones, we wanted to try to put in at least 6 to 8 species that would be mostly hardwood trees. Iowa is only has 2 native conifer trees that were growing in the 1700s, and only one of those species is forecast to do well in our future climate, Eastern red cedar. So yeah, we decided to try a couple species of conifers, but mostly hardwoods. I think we put in 12 different species of hardwood trees, oaks, hickory, walnut, and then some faster growing trees like black cherry and hackberry that can kind of help the trees grow nice and straight and tall.
So you're using those as what we would call nurse trees to strengthen the stems on those hardwoods.
Yeah, yeah. Trees tend to grow a lot better, straighter and taller if they grow in high competition.
Sure.
With a lot to get to the canopy, the top of the forest. So, yeah, I think those are the 2 most common problems I see with plantings done not by foresters, is that they use too few species and too few numbers of trees, so that over time, you eventually just don't have enough trees to have a forest, and you just kind of have like a widely spaced park like open grassland.
Sure. Gary, what type of understory plantings are you going to have? Will that, at some stage at least, involve some prairie plantings as far as perhaps getting into a savanna situation, maybe on the top of the planting?
Right now, for ease of management, we just have timothy and clover. We also have 3 rows of bushes, shrubs, that provide food and habitat for birds as well. So right now, it's just for maintenance. We're just maintaining it with timothy and clover, and ease for walking through it eventually as well.
Now, but, you talk about signage and that kind of thing. Is this going to be open to other folks being able to visit? Is that going to be an on-call or an invite? How are you going to go about doing that?
Yeah, we'll see how that evolves, but I really do hope it will be up by appointment. It's not something that we can just have people come and show up and go out there automatically, because it's at the corner of our property. But I will try to open it up as much as I reasonably can.
In the last minute that we've got, is there anything that you'd like to add that maybe we haven't touched on?
We're calling it Int Grove. I don't know if listeners get that.
Yeah, some of the, gosh, there seems to be a series associated with Ents.
So we need more Ents in the world to put out the fires of Sauron that's going on in this world. So I had seen the movie again while I was we were planning for this, and I said, oh, that seems so appropriate.
Are you alluding to we might see a hobbit or two in the future?
It is on a knoll. You never know. Something might happen there.
Gary's going to be a grandfather soon, so there will be a little hobbit running around.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate you spending a few moments with us. Pat has got a quote he'd like to share with everybody.
Great.
Yeah, in recognition of all your good work out there, here's an Aldo Leopold quote. We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect.
So we appreciate what you're doing, Gary, and thank you for helping him, Luke, and hopefully we'll get to visit with you in the future.
You're welcome anytime.
Have a great week.
Have a great week, fellas. We're going to welcome Andrew Kleeman now. He's the head football coach and a social studies instructor at Nevada High. Hello, Andrew.
Thanks for having us on.
We'd like to visit with you about a team that you are helping with at Nevada. It's kind of an interesting concept, I think. It's something to do with ethics?
Yeah, so we are involved in what is known as the National Ethics Bowl competition. So it really started 2 years ago, and it was really directed by a couple of professors of ethics and philosophy at Iowa State. And I think Dr. Padgett Walsh was supposed to is potentially coming on here this morning. I know the link was sent out last night, but yeah, so her and Dr. Tanichuk from Iowa State, they kind of approached a couple schools to pilot it 2 years ago, and we were lucky enough to be part of that. And Dr. Tanichuk and our, at the time, associate superintendent had a working relationship where he kind of approached me and said, hey, can we get this off the ground here? Can you recruit some students that you think would be good at it? And yeah, and we just finished year two, and our team is lucky enough to go on to the National Ethics Bowl, which is the week of, April 9, 10, and 11.
Okay. Well, before we talk about that part of the trek, can you explain a little bit what is the difference between an ethics team and maybe some of us are familiar with a debate team?
Yeah. So I think what Ethics Bowl is really about is we examine various cases that are of ethical dilemmas. And we prepare a presentation, which is 6 minutes long. And then during that process, we also respond to the opposing team's questions and comments. And then we also will have a Q&A with the judges at the end as well, which is a 10-minute session. And there's a rubric that's used for scoring all of that. And I guess to answer your question regarding debate, I think debate is much more structured and it is meant to be more persuasive. Although we are presenting a position, the idea of Ethics Bowl is to promote like a civil dialogue between the two groups that are participating.
Gosh, that seems like that's something that's really timely. Civil dialogue, that's two words that don't often come into conversation here lately. I think you ought to go beyond the team and perhaps talk with other instructors in the school and say, hey, we need to incorporate this in all of our courses. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that's such a valuable skill in today's world. And to be able to have our students have those experiences at a young age, you know, I agree with you, that ability to talk about things that are complex in nature and to be able to articulate it in an academic and respectful way is such a cool part of what I think the Ethics Bowl is all about. And to be honest, I kind of just fell into the position of, I guess you could say, coaching it. And it's been a lot of fun to watch our kids have to critically think on such complex subjects.
So how do you go about with a new student coming in? Well, first, let me ask you this. How do students get involved? Do they migrate to because of an interest, or do you reach out?
Yeah, a little bit of both. So, I mean, like I said, we're just in year two. And I mean, my content area, I teach government and I teach psychology and sociology. So I have very little background in ethics and philosophy, but the people at Iowa State have been very helpful with that. And the National Ethics Bowl has a ton of resources that allowed us to kind of get to that introductory level ethics and the different perspectives of ethical perspectives. So, yeah, I think what I did is basically I reached out to students that I felt would have a good experience doing Ethics Bowl just based on the work that they had done in my classes or referrals. So I would say I probably recruited most of the kids to come and be a part of it, but I've also had students that have reached out to me. And even since this past season, I've had students that have reached out that want to do it for next year. So it's certainly something that's open to our entire student body. But because it was such kind of a lesser known program in our school, I think it started off more as me trying to recruit kids that I felt would be good at it.
Let's talk about the students themselves a little bit. What grade levels? Is this open to all freshmen through seniors, or what's the makeup?
Yeah, I would say, it's open to our entire student body, but the last 2 years, it's been predominantly juniors and seniors. I would say mostly seniors. We've had some sophomores involved as well. I think it is a thing where you need to have a little maturity, and not that a freshman couldn't do it or a sophomore, they certainly can. But I do think that having a few years of maturity is a big benefit when discussing these issues and to really have to critically think on them.
So what type of subjects do you do the students tackle? How do you, is this an impromptu, it's a spur of the moment, or are they provided with a set of things to think about? How do they go about this?
Yeah, so the National Ethics Bowl puts out a case list each year. And that's, it consists of 15 cases in which the students analyze. And like I said, all of the cases are dealing with some sort of moral dilemma. So, for example, like one that we had this year was the ethics of dining out during the pandemic. So backtrack 1 year ago to where we were, and to consider the morality of dining out. And the risks involved with that, and for everybody, not only from a public health standpoint, but also from a local economy standpoint. So that would be one example of one of the cases that the kids discussed with an opponent.
Okay. So you alluded to the fact that you're progressing, the team is progressing in the standings. How many schools are involved currently? At least in the state of Iowa.
Yeah, so in the state of Iowa, we only had three this past year, but then they have what's known as like small regionals, which that was why it just got started here in Iowa. So we just had a few schools involved. But then once you get advanced from your small regional, then you go to what's known as a large regional. And that's where you're then paired off with a winner from another region, which could be in some cases a state. But in some of our states, there's a lot of schools involved. It's really popular on like the East Coast in the New England states. Like there's a lot of schools involved. But I couldn't tell you, but for sure hundreds. And I think Dr. Tanichuk at Iowa State, he had some experience on that part of the country when he was doing his doctoral work. And he brought it to Iowa State and wanted to bring it to the Midwest. And we ended up facing our large group regional against a team out of Minneapolis, De La Salle High School, which is right in the heart of Minneapolis, I believe. So then we were able to win that. And then now we advanced to the National Ethics Bowl, because we won that.
So locally, you indicated there are a couple of other high schools. Who did you go up against locally?
Yeah, so this past year, Ames High School, and also they had two teams, and then also Humboldt High School. And not to name them, but we've also had schools since then have reached out that want to participate next year. So I see the program growing here in Iowa, which is really encouraging.
So the smaller population center of Nevada successfully persuaded ethically the judges that they were the better team between Ames and Nevada this year, huh?
Yeah, and it's been fun the last 2 years. An Ames team advanced the first year, and they actually made it all the way to nationals too. And then this year we had a team advance, and I guess we just kind of look at it as a fun opportunity, and you know, we'll cheer whoever makes it on out of our region. But yes, we are a little smaller, but we've got great kids here at Nevada, and you know, I think they've been able to prove that. I think De La Salle High School is a very large high school in Minneapolis, and you know, it just shows, you know, you can find really brilliant kids anywhere.
Sure. Now, we talked about the questions that are selected. Are they the same at the local and regional level as the national level, or do they differ?
Yeah, the cases are consistent. So every regional group will look at the same 15 cases, and then actually they present a new 15 for the National Ethics Bowl, which we've been in the process of reviewing in the past 2 weeks. So So I guess you'd look at, there's 15 cases for the small and large regionals, and then once you advance, there's a new 15 that you then have to prepare. And the students don't get any notes. They have a scratch piece of paper during the presentation, so they essentially have to memorize their positions on all 15 cases prior to the competitions. And they don't know what cases they're going to get. They're randomized.
Okay, so they're prepared on those 15, but it's a luck of the draw, more or less, it sounds like, as far as what they're actually.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is you don't know what kind of question you're going to get. So you can kind of predict somewhat, but you know, we found the judges will put out some questions regarding the case that maybe we didn't anticipate, and that's fun to watch the kids have to think on their feet, you know, when a judge does do that.
So how do folks, are these open to the public as far as listening and observing, or how do citizens get involved?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think locally, you know, we'd like to, you know, host it in an area in which people could come watch. But I do know that everything's being held via Zoom this year. Typically, we would go to the Iowa State campus for our competition. And then from there, the National Ethics Bowl is actually held at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. So with that said, to answer your question, I know it's held via Zoom this year, and I do think there is a spectator link. That link, I'm sure, we'll share out on our school district page once I get more information. But I don't have a ton of knowledge yet on public access to viewing.
Okay. Since this is a relatively new team or club, how do the students get recognition? You know, athletes get a letter, so do some of the scholastic entities, band, those kinds of things. How do you promote the fact that individuals are taking part in this and have excelled, or, you know, are at least ethical members of society?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll be honest with you. We're just trying to navigate it as we go. I volunteered to do this about a year and a half ago when we first started, and now we're, you know, getting interviews from local radio. So, I mean, it's kind of grown pretty quickly, and we're trying to navigate that. We are, I guess, a school club in terms of recognition. Yeah, there's no like lettering requirements or anything like that, as it's not like a sanctioned activity. However, I do know that our school district supports and promotes these type of activities really well locally. So, you know, they get recognition on our school Facebook page and the school announcements. I know at our school, we have a tradition when schools make like state tournaments and so forth, they do a tunnel And it's like a send off for that, those groups, and everybody makes a tunnel throughout the school and claps as people walk through. Well, we're going to have to do that during via Zoom, I guess, or Google Hangout this year. I'm sure
yeah.
activities director will make a video send off for them. But yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a tremendous accomplishment actually for these kids. And, you know, these are kids that are involved in a lot of activities being in a small town.
I would think
for them to balance it all is pretty impressive.
I would think that, gosh, a certificate or a pin or something like that that they can put on their resume.
We did get a trophy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we did get a small trophy, yeah.
Something they can put on their resume and say, you know, when they're trying for that first career move, that would be just another feather that they can wave.
I agree.
I hate to put you on the spot. We've just got a minute or so left, but what's your definition of good ethics?
Oh, man. I think taking your life experiences and being able to approach them from a moral standpoint. So I think you've got to be able to determine what your morals are and then use those as your compass. And that's kind of what we do with our students, is they have to design a presentation based on what they believe to be morally correct, and then to stand fast in their position and to do so respectfully. I am certainly no expert on ethics or morality in terms of the academic side. I'm just a government teacher, but you know, I'm doing my best, and it's been a lot of fun to watch the kids. I have to think critically.
You sound like a government teacher that I would have liked to have taken government from in high school. Don't fool yourself. I can't help but quote Aldo Leopold again. We've done that already this morning, but I like to quote Aldo when somebody's asking me about good ethics, and that's doing the right thing when nobody's watching, even when the wrong thing is legal. And to me, that's one of my guiding posts.
I like that. Yeah, that's a lot better than my definition.
We all have good ethics. That's just, well, I hope we all have some good ethics. Thank you, Andy, for joining us this morning. And we're going to go to a music break now. And I'll Never Find Another You by The Seekers. Just something to just make you feel good this morning, I think. You know, it's foggy out there, and maybe we'll find someone out in the fog this morning. Pat's laughing. I can barely see him across the studio. If you're just tuning in, I'm Mike Metz, your host for the hour. Susan Guiasta is on a well-deserved break, so Deb Shildroth, Assistant City Manager, is with us. Hello, Deb. Here's hoping your Tuesday is starting out well and hopefully the fog will clear.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for this opportunity and this. I think this is a great way to start the morning, and I'm pleased to have with me a couple of the Human Relations Commission members who will talk a little bit about what the commission does, and we'll be open to taking any questions or having any dialogue with you as we go along. So let me know when you want me to jump into that, or do you want me to give a couple of announcements?
Why don't you go ahead and give a couple city announcements, and then we'll go right to our guests.
All right, very good. And you're right, Susan is on a well-deserved break, but she will be back next week. So just a couple of things. We have the Ames Public Library, as of yesterday, opened up their first and second floors, so people can now go in and browse the stacks. They are asking people to be mindful of the time that they're in the library, try to keep it at about 30 minutes. And definitely want to wear masks and social distance and do all of those good things so we can continue keeping the library open and keeping people safe and hopefully move to another level of service in the coming months. So wanted to share that. We also have coming up here on March 30th, it's a meeting that is open to the public via Zoom to talk about holding an Ames-based film festival. This has come up from time to time, interest in the community, and so our Parks and Recreation Department is offering this Zoom meeting at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, March 30th, and the Zoom link can be found on the website at cityofames.org. So I'll stop right there.
Okay. Well, go ahead and introduce our two board members here.
All right. Pleased to have with me Jemai Fisher and Madesh Samanu, who are members of the Ames Human Relations Commission. And just a couple of facts about the commission. Communities with populations of 30,000 or more are required to have a commission like this. And within the city of Ames, we established our first ordinance around this commission in 1974. So we've had 47 years of this commission and residents from the city representing different facets who worked very hard on advancing the mission of this commission. And we currently have 5 members, and individuals who are interested in serving in this capacity can fill out applications online, and the mayor reviews those applications and makes those recommendations to city council, and so council then makes those appointments. So it follows the same process that we have for other boards and commissions. So be looking for that information on the city's website. It talks a little bit about all of our boards and commissions. So I really want Jemai and Madesh to do most of the talking this morning, so I will turn it over to them to talk about the Human Relations Commission.
Okay, well, welcome to you both. How about, Jemai, if you start a little bit, introduce yourself and just give us a point or two on what you do on the commission.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me this morning. So, again, Ames Human Relations Commission purpose is to really study the existence of discrimination in the community and to work to minimize or eliminate it by promoting goodwill among the various racial, religious, and ethnic groups in the city. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Madesh to let him talk a little bit more about some of the other things that we do.
Hi, my name is Madesh. So one of the other thing we do is like we recognize people by giving awards. One of the awards we have is Humanitarian Award. So this award recognizes a worthy individual whose contributions to our community demonstrate extraordinary quality, especially in efforts to promote diversity, inclusion, and equity. And recipients are presented with the award during the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration, which was held in January. And the applications for this award is on Friday, December 10, 2021.
Okay, so how do people go about, can the members of the public or citizenry nominate individuals? How do they go about doing that?
So we have an application in the website where they can fill it out. And we have a couple of questions of like how this, like why you are recommending this person, like what this person did to the community. So we get those applications at the end and we review it as a board, and we decide on like who's going to get this year's award.
Okay. Is this a new award, or have there been past recipients that you can share with us? A couple. You don't have to go down if there's more than a few.
There are many for sure. I think Deb has a list of the people.
Okay. Well, Deb, do you want to just give us maybe the last 2 years recipients, if you have those available?
Yeah. It's a great award, and we do accept applications all throughout the year, and we make the announcement in December, and then the award is given at the MLK Community Celebration in January. And so this year's recipient was Mr. Charles Grimm. He's a music teacher with the Ames Community School, Meeker Elementary, I believe it is. And so he was our recipient this year. And last year it was Julie Hopper. And we do have a list that goes back into the early 2000s.
Sure.
And so that's one of the great things about the Human Relations Commission. They do have a budget. It's part of the city's budget, but they do have funds available to make this award and another award available that Jemai will talk about.
Okay. Jemai, would you like to talk about that for a minute, please?
Absolutely. I thought you'd never ask. So the Home from Everyone Award is actually one that's coming up very quickly in terms of our application due dates. And so it's important to note that the recipient of this award goes to an individual or an organization or group. And so these people are going to be recognized. These people or person is going to be recognized in April, which is Fair Housing Month. And so to talk a little bit about what exactly the award is and who it goes to, is it is a way to acknowledge property managers, owners, or other housing providers for enhancing the quality of life for all populations in the Ames Community, be that an individual or a group. And so we're really looking for those in our community who go above and beyond to promote housing equality for our neighbors.
That sounds like a magnificent award. And you say that's coming up here on the 17th.
So that is tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. That's the deadline. So if anybody out there can still nominate, they've got to get it in and quick. What I find, the two of you are younger voices, and that is so appealing to me because this board was set up, what, in 1974? About the time I transferred from Wisconsin to Iowa. So it's had a distinguished history, and it's so great to see some younger voices still continuing on the board. Do either of you have anything else you'd like to add before I ask one other question?
No, I guess I just want to highlight the fact that, like you said, we are a very diverse group of folks who represent a lot of different interests within the Ames community. But just to talk a little bit about some of our involvement with the community. So there is currently a Building Inclusive Organization Symposium. That is something that our chair has served on the planning committee for, a really great transformative opportunity for local friends and members of the community to learn more about what it means to be inclusive within their organization. So not only great personal development, but professional development as well. And then another one of our co-chairs recently was a keynote speaker at the MLK Day community celebration this year. So shout out to both Jill as well as Wayne, who are our wonderful chair as well as co-chairs.
Adish, anything you'd like to add?
Yep, I have one last thing to say. So if anyone wants to bring up any complaints or suggestions, complaints in regards to the Civil Rights Commission, so City of Ames has a partnership with Iowa Civil Rights Commission. So if they can reach out to Deb or any other assistant city manager, they can help to file a complaint to the Iowa Civil Rights Commission.
Very good. You could make it as a mind reader, because that was going to be my question to you. So thank you for addressing that. One final question before we run out of our time frame here. How do you folks feel about our city, our neighborhood here? Do you see good advancement in the way people approach these issues? We're somewhat of a good, diverse community here with the university and that kind of thing. And I would like to think that for the most part, we all get along and try to see the other individual's point of view. But I'm sure there are cases that some of us aren't aware of. Are we making progress?
Absolutely, Mike. I think this, like you said before, this is a community that is becoming increasingly diverse. And whenever you have different people from different places gathering, it's really important to not only create an environment of tolerance, but taking it a step further to create an environment of appreciation where differences are seen, but they're also valued. And so I think we definitely are making progress, but I think there still is a tremendous amount of work to be done, because even though the space is pretty diverse, it's not as quite as diverse as a lot of other people may think. And so I think in that regard, it's really just all about getting the word out there about the mission of the kind of things that we do here as members of the commission. But I definitely think that we're taking strides in the right direction, and I'm hoping that we continue to do so.
I couldn't agree with you more. And this fits so well today, the topic, because in light of talking with the newly formed ethics team, there's an old saying, you got to walk in the other person's shoes to be really appreciate their situation, and feel that that's important. And I'm glad to see that you folks are keeping involved in this kind of thing. Any last words before we part?
Well, I would just add, as staff liaison to the Human Relations Commission, there is so much talent that comes to the commission, and I sure appreciate Jemai and Madesh and all the other commission members. Volunteerism to serve in this capacity, because that's what makes this community what it is. And I look forward to this current year as we can plan and schedule for more outreach kinds of events so that we can promote and make sure people are aware of the Human Relations Commission and the role they play in our community.
That's great. Great words to end our discussion on. Thank you, Deb. Thank you, Jemai and Madesh. And hope to have you back sometime.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
And as our listeners, our longtime listeners know, that's Anna Banana's theme song. Welcome, Anna Banana.
I always love Tuesdays. Welcome. Because it is Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI when? This Tuesday and all the days. So these heart-to-heart messages are potato sayings for the gardener. When all things spoke, the potato said, set me warm, dig me warm, eat me warm, that's all I want. And a person similar to small potatoes is not an interesting person. Now, these Irish sayings that use small potatoes to describe a dull and boring person would never be said about anyone connected to KHOI, which is why I'm trying to tempt you to listen in, and certainly not the host of the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. So if you tune in, you will hear Donna share her thoughts on Irish recipes for St. Patrick's Day, which is tomorrow. And there will be an interview from the archives, a talk with Iowa State University legume researcher Steve Cannon about a little known and underappreciated Iowa plant. I'm going to probably say this wrong. Apios americana, also known as the ground nut. Kind of like me, a little nutty. Donna looks into shrimp farming in Iowa. Lana talks about some new garden plants, a kitchen meeting of wild game, birds, and marmalade. Interesting mix. So what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show? Donna Lana Kitchen Show talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor at noon today and then repeated at 7 p.m. So, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, how about this? Wherever you go and whatever you do, may the luck of the Irish be there with you. So, Mike Metz, what will we be lucky enough to hear on Science Bites if we tune in? Where will we go in the science world? Whatever will you and Sam Warmly do to get us to be excited about science?
Well, one thing I've got to tell you before I talk about the program this afternoon at 4:30 to 5 is it's often said that if you're planting by the signs that you need to plant your first potatoes around Good Friday or thereafter. And I always do it at night. And you know why I do that, Anna?
Why do you do that?
Because the potatoes have eyes and I don't want them looking at me when I'm planting
them. That's a good
one. On Science Bites, Anna, Sam Warmly and I are going to be joined with Mary Richards, and we're going to have a continued part on the Ames Climate Change Plan, talking about the Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And this is either going to be the last or the second to last portion of this. So we may delay the fourth and have some other things. But, yeah. Citizens can tune in and hear what their city of Ames is doing about climate change.
Nice. Well, if you tune in at 8:30 p.m., you get to spend time with me for the Heart to Heart Messages show. I select songs to match the guest messages and our Heart to Heart conversation. So tonight's guest is Jennifer L. Knox, who I was introduced to by the Local Talk program. And here's what Jennifer wrote in a piece titled, I Chose the Poodle, Thwarting Expectations and Shooting Yourself in the Foot with Humor. Humor also increases memory, but unlike music chills, it lights up the area in our brains that react to surprise, release, and relief. Perhaps the most important distinction is that unlike music's ability to increase our introspectiveness, humor makes us feel that we're part of a group in all the same boat. It's a we thing, much like us on Tuesdays. And then my favorite line from Jennifer is, that's why writing to get laughs is like becoming a nun to get laid. It's absolutely the wrong way to go about it. So, ha, ha, ha. So that should give you a little teaser to tune in to Jennifer L. Knox and me talk about things. And the song dedication match to our heart-to-heart conversation, it's this. To all those who love birds, including Pat. I know Pat loves birds. I dedicate these lyrics to you. I can't stand in line at the store. The mean little people are such a bore. But it's all right if you act like a turd, because I like birds. If you're small and on a search, I've got a feeder for you to perch on. Well, that definitely gives you a little flavor of what we'll be talking about tonight, tuning in at 8:30 with heart-to-heart messages. So let's jump ahead to a sneak preview to what's ahead this Thursday. Mike Murphy, what's going on with You Name It?
It's Women's Sistery Month. And so we'll be exploring the music. The first hour will be songs about particular women. And since we had talked about trees earlier, one of those women is Julia Butterfly Hill. Are you familiar with her?
No, but that's a fabulous name.
Probably 20 years ago, there was some loggers taking down redwood trees, and she climbed up in the tree and lived in this tree for over a year to save it from being cut down. And so we'll hear a song from her and many others, and then live music from great women artists in the second hour. So that's all happening. And I want to tell you really quick, it was 1 year ago today that I walked through this door
Welcome, Mike Murphy.
He gets a bunch of bananas today.
Yes, that's a bunch of love there. Woohoo! So, that's fantastic. And if you like microtonal music, check out All Things Piano today at 9 a.m. Tom Russell will feature music by Ivan Wojciechowski. I don't know if that's right either. Both for string quartet and for four pianos tuned two by two, one quarter tone apart. Wow. He's following that with some sweet and calming Mozart. Nice. So lots of reasons to tune into KHOI. It is time for Anna Banana to split, but I'm filled with bunches of love for KHOI and for hopes that you'll tune in to a community of love, care, and support that's KHOI. The heart of Iowa, which is you and me. Back to you, Mike Metz.
Thank you, Hannah, for another uplifting message to help jumpstart a tremendous Tuesday.
You have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Live streaming of our broadcast can be found online at khoifm.org.
This program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg and engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. I have been your host, Mike Metz.
Please consider becoming a member of this fine community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Yep, our theme song, as always, is backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again on the radio.